Hello and welcome to episode number 7 of Splash Pad, a TCU On As I podcast focusing on the TCU women's basketball team. I'm your host, Tori Couch, and I'm joined by the voice of Killer Frogs, JD Andrus. We are recording on Sunday, January 12th. The number 11 ranked Horned Frogs hit the road for two conference games this past week and went 2-0. TCU is now 17-1 overall and 5-0 in the Big 12. How are you doing today, JD?
Doing great. Excited to once again talk about the exciting times of women's basketball at TCU. What about you, Tori? We're a week into the new year, right? Second week of the new year. How are you?
Yeah. Oh, I'm doing good. Just kind of figuring things out and rolling along. Life is throwing a few things, but it's fine. But
More fun that
no,
way, right?
sure. But no, doing good. And like you, I'm excited about this team. It's weird when they're on the road because it's like, oh, I have to like find the channel and watch it. But excited that they're coming back this week for a two-game homestand. Got some big stuff going on this week, and we'll get to that. But kind of open up today, I want to talk about some news that came out going into last week. Haley Van Lith and Sedona Prince were named to the Wooden Award midseason top 25 watch list. This is a huge honor. They are two of four players in TCU program history to receive consideration. The other two who have made that list in the past were Sandora Irvin in the 04-05 season and Helena Service daughter in the 10-11 season, both of whom just happened to be TCU's Hall of Fame. So wonderful nomination for both these student athletes, and you can make an argument that they should be on the final, they should just keep staying on that list.
I fully expect Sedona to be in the finalists just because of what she's doing blocks wise as well. HVL is kind of in that tough situation, right? Where women's basketball is such a guard heavy sport that it's very hard to contest with that best of the best, especially when it comes down to that finalist, compared to most forward positions are pretty thin in women's basketball. So it does open the door up for Sedona to potentially be a finalist, especially if she keeps putting up stat lines like she has been. Congrats to both of them. And I honestly, I would have even been surprised Madison Connor had even just found her name on there just because of her, scoring ability. So it just speaks to what Mark Campbell has brought in and what the girls have done so far this year.
And interesting to note, this is the second nomination in both of their careers. For Van Lith, she was nominated in 22-23 season at Louisville, and Sedona was nominated last year, even though she missed how much of last season. So, and kind of your point, the forward center position, it's a little bit easier to stand out there. So just something to keep tabs on as the season continues. Let's jump right into some recaps of the two games this week. First one was at Kansas. TCU won 80 to 73. TCU was the first team to drop 80 points on Kansas this year, and it was the 10th time TCU had dropped at least 80 points this season. So no surprise, TCU is able to score. We've kind of been seeing that all season. Sedona scored 30 points, grabbed 14 rebounds, had four assists and three blocks. It's the first time she'd scored 20 points in a half. Her third 30-point game, tied for third all-time at TCU. So she's chasing her teammate, Madison Connor, for that record. And it's her 23rd career double-double. Haley Van Lith had 19 points, six assists. Taylor Bigby, 12 points, two assists. And really, Prince, Van Lith, and Bigby were just kind of hitting timely shots to help TCU maintain their lead throughout this game.
The biggest difference maker kind of between making this game a close game and compared to what the scoreline actually shows is only the third time all season that TCU hasn't led in turnovers. So it's just something that it wasn't even bad. Like it was 9-7, it was the turnovers. So it's just something that kind of made it look a little bit worse. TCU didn't turn or turn the ball over more than Kansas, and conversely, didn't make them turn the ball over as much as they normally do to a team. So it was one, just kind of a higher offensive scoring game, not any bad defense, really. Sometimes that happens, right? Like both teams just find the basket, and then it's who can come up with a bigger stop at the bigger time. So it is really good. And you talked about it last weekend that I know it's a 7-point game, but like it's still really good to see them, one, trail at some point this game, two, to still have them play this close wire to wire of a game.
Yeah. Well, and you were talking about the turnovers. TCU had 0 fast break points. And I think that's part of why this game was a little bit closer, and kind of TCU was down and things like that, because they never got that quick, fast pace up the court going. And that's something that really fuels them, and that feeds off of the minimum turnovers as well. Like was mentioned, TCU did not necessarily come out great in this game. They were down for a little bit. They had a 30-32 halftime lead, but they were down 3 points near the end of the first quarter. Both teams shot at least 50% from the field, and Kansas were 45% from three. So just like you said, high octane, a lot of scoring, not a ton of defense in this game. You know, and if you've got teams that just shots are falling, you're getting the good clean looks, that's what's going to happen. The biggest lead TCU had was 68-56 with about 4 minutes left off of Van Lith and one. Kansas cut that lead back to six, and then Bigby nailed kind of a big three-pointer to get that lead back up and just kind of maintain it. Van Lith and Prince combined for 17 of TCU's 22 fourth quarter points. So no surprise there. You're going back to that combo that has worked all season and that you know in crunch time they're going to come through.
Yeah, I think it's something that you're going to see more teams kind of start to play keen to of when it is a close game. You have seen Sedona and HVO roll back to that just old-fashioned pick and roll. Who are they going to go with? And it's been working a lot that I think you're going to start to see teams start to nail it down a little bit more. I mean, you saw it against, it was Colorado, I believe, that started to nail it down a little bit more. And you'll see teams that have capable bigs, at least size-wise, kind of go with that more, that it'll just open up the door for like Madison Connor, who, doesn't always have to have the biggest game. So it's really nice to see that they could just do it automatically when they want, but it's also something that as it goes on and you get into bigger games, especially with, the Kansas State game looming and Oklahoma State, on the rise in Utah, like you're gonna see teams who are, I don't want to say coached better, but have enough veteranness to kind of be aware of what they need to play for.
Well, I think what you just mentioned there, the veteran players, some of these teams in the Big 12 are younger, or maybe they're transitioning to the Big 12 from a different conference. So you might just not have that experience. And even if you're not, even if they don't have an HVL or Prince or somebody like that on their roster, just having that veteran leadership and knowing how to handle those situations goes a long way. And so I think being able to go against some teams like that that have that veteran leadership, that's gonna be really good for TCU as they're trying to not only do well in conference, but prepare for March as well. Just a few other little notes from this game. This was the first win in Allen Fieldhouse since 2020 for TCU, and their fourth win there overall. And it's the fourth time TCU has won consecutive road games in the Big 12. That's saying a lot considering TCU has been in the conference now for over a decade.
Only other thing of note for this one for me is this was the most fouls TCU has had in a game all year at 19, personal fouls that they've had. So, I mean, it was 19-17 in the foul differential, so it's not even that big of a difference. There was like two more free throws shot by Kansas, so it's not that big of a thing, but it is something to kind of just keep note of. You didn't really get to see Mark Campbell kind of navigate what it'll look like on the bench, whenever players are getting close with four fouls and whatnot. So it is something that kind of just TCU hasn't had that, right? I believe the most they've had prior to this was 16. So you're gonna just gonna it's something that even, we're barely halfway into the season, right? That it's still kind of getting worked out. Mark Campbell hasn't really had to say, hey, all right, how am I gonna manage, HVO when she gets four fouls? Does Madison Connor take over at the one? Do you slide Bigby? Do you put Donovan Hunter and just plug and play there? So it's something that it was kind of good to see Mark Campbell take a little bit of a shot at, even though we didn't really need to.
Yeah, well, and earlier this season, I believe it was NC State, Sedona ended up with four fouls and kind of picked two or three up kind of really quickly in that early in the second half. And That was a time where he had to make a decision, and he trusted Sedona that she wasn't going to pick up that fourth, that fifth foul and really put them in trouble. And she played great. She played smart. And so I do. I'm with you. I think it's good that he's being put in some situations where he can evaluate what he has and really do some more of those strategic things when it comes to fouls. And there have been a few games where some girls have had four fouls or, things like that, but they've been in more of the blowout ones, so it's not as critical.
Yeah.
But I think that's gonna, be something to watch in some of these closer games. If somebody does get in foul trouble, what's the move?
Yeah, I think it's something you'll kind of see, not really forced, but something that Mark Campbell might may play into, especially against, opponents like, who are on the lower end of the Big 12, like maybe UCF or Arizona or ones like those, that it's like, hey, you know what? You have four fouls. I don't know. We haven't really ran what we're gonna do when we players get in foul trouble in late game situations. Let's kind of just test it out here. And I think you might see that. So you might see some minutes get skewed a little bit. And it's just, like I said, you're nearly at the halfway point of the season. So you kind of got to start getting not prepared for the rest of the second half, but also, the tournament as well, because that'll be here before you know it.
And I think that's when you really see benches start to get really short. I mean, TC already uses a fairly short bench. There's, I'd say, consistently four players off the bench, so nine total that he'll use, but really only seven or eight in a game. And that's when you really start to see stuff get truncated. So yeah, to know, okay, we're in this kind of game against this type of team, this is who's going to come in. Those are always things coaches are watching for and taking note of. But to do in a game setting, it's a little bit different. So just, something to watch. So that on Saturday, TC went to Lubbock to take on Texas Tech and came away with a 69-43 win. Just absolutely dominated after the first quarter. Haley Van Lith had 22 points and 7 assists. Interesting note on her assists here. She has 110 on the season, and she needs 75 to be TCU's single season record holder. With 13 conference games left, plus however many postseason games, I'm almost 100% confident she's going to get that record. She'd need 5.7 per game just in the regular season to get it, and she averages 6 a game.
Yeah, no, I mean, okay, this is kind of an unrelated, but you talked about TCU Hall of Fame earlier. With all the records she's setting for her personal self, right? And potential records that she's going to break, not even potential, like records she's going to break at TCU. I know it's a one and done kind of year, but I mean, well, Haley Van Lith have a spot somewhere in TCU's Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. It's already like a small list, right? Like, whether that's by choice or by, trying to keep it a tight-knit circle, like.
That's a good question. I don't know if there's maybe, has to play minimum number of years to qualify. Could be one of those things you have to play a minimum of 2 years to qualify for the Hall of Fame, things like that. But if not, there's a very strong argument for her, Sedona, maybe Madison, just because she set the season record for threes. She's likely going to do it again. The 30 point game record, things like that. So you've got players on this team who can make an argument. It's just a matter of, I think, of is there a minimum years qualification
Yeah.
thing? But I absolutely think you can make an argument for her. And she's only 15 assists away from 500 for her career, which is absolutely incredible. And if you think about it, she's gotten over 20% of those here at TCU. That is how much she's grown as a player since arriving here in what, June, July?
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible.
I mean, yeah, that's also partially why I asked the question, right? Like, with someone with such a storied career in college basketball, such as her, and over 20% of her assists have came here in Fort Worth, like, it's a big number. Like, I mean, she's doing incredible things. She just, her, Mark Campbell, Sedona, Madison, taking women's basketball to new heights here, like unheard of areas outside of Waco, which doesn't count as a city. So, like, yeah, I just think it's something that you kind of obviously have to see how the rest of the season goes, right? But like,
Sure.
it is something that, if there's a time to have a conversation, maybe not now. Yeah.
No, it's when she does hit that mark, which based on our averages, will probably be probably in Stillwater, if averages hold, that's going to be such a huge accomplishment for her. And I'm sure they will honor her in some way for that when that does happen. So Sedona contributed 20 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 blocks against Tech. That is her 7th double-double in 10 career Big 12 games. So, real good chance she's going to get a double-double in the Big 12 play, which is so hard to do. But I just, like we've talked about earlier, that just speaks to what a unique and special player she is. Madison Connor, 13 points, 4 assists, shooting 49% from 3-point range over her last 7 outings. I mean, that when you're doing that and you've got Haley going and Sedona going, it just makes this team really hard to stop.
I mean, the biggest thing is like normally when you see like a double double, like you're looking at points and assists, points and rebounds. You're not, and then when you think about a triple double, you're thinking about the converse, right? Like if they already had the rebounds or they already had the assists, like there's a legitimate chance at some point Sedona could get a triple double with 10 blocks. Like I mean, it's a very far stretch, but like it's a legitimate chance. It's I'd put it somewhere around like 18% of a chance, like.
No, and I agree. Last year, she had a game where she had 10 blocks and she got a double double that way. So, I mean, I don't put it out of the realm of possibility. And I think it's one of those things you just have to, you want to watch it, you got to watch all these games because it could happen in any of them.
Yeah, I mean, you literally never know what you're gonna get whenever you turn on a TCU women's basketball game. Are you gonna get the HVL show where she just completely takes over at the one? Are you gonna get Sedona just bullying other teams in the paint? You're gonna get Madison Connor just draining every 3 point she makes for a 30-point game. Like, it's what makes this team so much more fun. Is you're just, I mean, this Texas Tech game is like the perfect analogy for it, right? Like, every quarter was like a brand new TCU women's basketball team. You didn't know what you were gonna get.
Yeah, you want to talk about the quarters. TCU, so at the end of the first quarter is 1-point game. Tech was hanging in there. Second quarter, TCU allowed 5 points. Third quarter, a little more competitive, not quite as big gap, allowed 4 points in the fourth quarter. And Tech's first fourth quarter points came with 1:18 left in the game. And they made 5 second half field goals. I mean, that's just, I mean, that we knew TCU had a good defense. And to be able to do this against a Big 12 team, I know Tech's not the best, it's still a Big 12 team. To be able to do that against a seasoned Big 12 team, that's really impressive.
Yeah, I felt what it was like to be a South Carolina fan in the second half of that TCU South Carolina game. Like, we were like, wow, I didn't realize they hadn't scored yet. Like, it was, and it wasn't even anything we really, like, we kind of did call, like, not that it would be a blowout, but like, Texas didn't have the offensive capabilities to be able to keep up. And a lot of part of it was just TCU playing just suffocating defense. Like, you, that's, and that's kind of what you're going to see happen whenever they play teams that aren't offensive minded around the country, like maybe other like Houston and Cincinnati and Arizona games that they have coming up. But yeah, that's just kind of what you're going to do whenever you can play as suffocating defense as TCU does.
Yeah. Well, and to your point, they held Jasmine Shavers, Tech's leading scorer, to 3 points on 1 of 9 shooting. If you basically shut out their go-to person, it's going to be really hard for them to score. Bailey Maupin took that leading scorer mantle with 23 points, but then nobody else had more than 5 points. I mean, if it's a basically a one-person show and your other scorer can't do anything, your chances of winning are just, they're not good. It doesn't really matter who you're playing.
Yeah, I mean, the Tech shot 22% on the game, the second lowest that an opponent has shot against TCU this year. Lowest is Texas State at 20%. But then it's a converse effect, right? Like in the same week, Kansas had the second highest opponent shooting percentage at 50%. The only other closest was South Carolina, who's at 51%. Like you know, and then you also do it on the opposite end. So it's just like, and it's not even really anything different. It's just a sport of basketball. Like, they played the same style of defense and the same intensity against Kansas. Kansas was just able to make tougher shots. So it is something that it's like, you can see, you know, the results of the work that they're putting in against a team like Texas Tech. And then you see the results of the offensive work they're putting in against a team like Kansas, where, hey, it's just their day on the offensive side, but it's also your day.
Yeah. No, and I think too in this game you're starting to see those tiers starting to form in the Big 12. You and I were kind of messaging about this a little bit yesterday, but I think you're starting to see the tiers start to form in the Big 12, and I think this game kind of is a good representation of that. Yes, Tech can be competitive with TCU, but when TCU starts to do little things here and there, pick up their defense, hit a couple shots, things like that, you start to see that separation emerge, and you start to see, okay, things are starting to tear out a little bit, and there's a clear difference.
Yeah, it's kind of what we talked about. Like right now, there is a clear one and two. There is, it's Kansas State and TCU, and then, like, you know, we said West Virginia, Baylor, Utah, Oklahoma State are all in that second tier, at with West Virginia kind of being able to fluctuate between tier one and two because of the defense they play. But they're not an overall rounded team enough on the offensive side to be able to say they're in that tier one. But their defense can keep them in the game with absolutely anyone. So, but yeah, you're kind of starting to see it. There's teams can still go up to tier one. Like Oklahoma State could slide up if they want to. Utah definitely can. They have the capabilities of showing that maybe they belong in that tier one. But I just think talent-wise alone, it's Kansas State and TCU, and then kind of a clear step back, and then you see the other teams.
And just a few little other notes on the Texas Tech game. TCU held Texas Tech to season lows in field goals of 13, field goal percentage, which you mentioned, 3-point percentage of 11%, and 4 assists. Those were all season lows for Texas Tech. So just absolutely dominating defensive performance after that first quarter for TCU. This is their second 5-0 start in conference play in program's 48-year history. And the last time that happened when TCU went 5-0 start conference play was 2000-2001 season. They won the WAC and made the NCAA tournament for the first time. So just a fun little note there that, you know, kind of put that in context that this 5-0 start is, it's not common for TCU at all.
Even more so, the last time TCU won in Lubbock, Max Duggan was a freshman. Like, it's been that long. Like, this, it's why when I stated at the beginning of the season, is this TCU's best team of all time? It's not, you know, me trying to hype them up or an oxymoron. It is literally like the bar isn't high. It's TCU has not been a storied women's basketball program in any sense.
No, I'm back in the Mountain West days, around 07, 08, 09, 2010, 2011, right around in there under Jeff Mitty. They had some really good teams. They did really well in the Mountain West and they got to the NCAA tournament several times. But by no means were those overly dominant teams because you were in the Mountain West. You weren't going to be able to get the top players in college basketball to come here. So, all those things considered, it's not surprising that this team is breaking all these records and winning in places that they haven't won since, you know, Max Duggan was a freshman, which, what would that have been, 2018,
2019,
2019? I mean, there's a reason all these records are falling and all these firsts are happening. So it's, I think it speaks to the growth of the program too. You know, there was a lot of good that happened under the previous coaches, and now Mark Campbell's just taking it to another level. That that's going to be really hard to maintain and reach again. But you know, we talked a couple episodes ago about some of the recruits he's bringing in. It's not impossible for him to continue to play. You know, have an elite team. It just takes time to build that. So we're going to jump forward to this week. TCU has two games. They'll both be home games, UCF and number 22 Utah. So UCF is the first game, Tuesday, January 14 at 6:30 p.m. UCF, they played them just a few weeks ago, won that game 92-52. UCF is 7-8 and 0-5 in the Big 12. Their most recent game was a 64-58 loss versus Cincinnati. In that game that TC played at UCF in December, Caitlin Peterson, Hannah Gusters, kind of their two main players, did miss that game. it looks like they are back. And really, those are going to be kind of the two keys for UCF to even just keep this somewhat close. Peterson's averaging just under 21 points a game. Gusters is averaging just under 13 points a game with 7 rebounds. And she can size-wise play with Sedona. She's 6'6". Sedona's 6'7". So from that standpoint, she can play with her. But those two really have to have really good games for UCF to have a chance.
Also, I don't know who UCF made angry in the scheduling department, but having to play TCU within 3 weeks of each other and having played West Virginia already, and then after this game against TCU, they have Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Baylor, and then Houston. It's not fair. Like
No, that is a
they're
rough
just
stretch.
getting put through the ringer right now.
Jeez.
So it is something that, yeah, they're getting the two best players. I mean, when you're going on an unfortunate slide and you've already played a team who beat you by 40 points, it kind of doesn't matter who you get back. It's such a big mental block after a while that it could just play a really big factor in this game.
Yeah.
So it's something to just kind of keep an eye on that even though they're getting these players back. I mean, even if you considered, I know it doesn't work this way, but if you took their season average and added TCU, still wins by 6 in that game. Like, it's still. It will be fun to watch Sedona kind of battle with someone who's around the same height as her. That's something to keep an eye on. And it will be fun watching HVO kind of go against, Caitlin Peterson a little bit. So just kind of on the offensive side of the ball. So just something to really keep an eye on. Other than that, I don't expect anything different from what you saw the first game.
No, kind of like you said, it'd probably be a little bit closer just because they do have kind of their two key pieces. But I mean, this is the worst scoring offense since Big 12 play has started. Just looking at their conference games, so the worst scoring offense, the second worst scoring defense. The Big 12 opponents are shooting almost 50% against them. Like, there's not a whole lot more you can expect other than probably won't be a 40-point blowout. So
I mean, to be fair, UCF is their average margin of games right now is negative 22 points. Like, it could even be a 40-point blowout again. Like, you don't expect it, but like with the way that their trends have been, it's a possibility.
So then Friday, January 17 at 6:30 p.m., TC will play number 22 Utah. This is great and ranked opponent for them again. Big 12 foe. I'm really looking at this game going, okay, this is another big one for them. Not necessarily because Utah's, NC State or South Carolina, but just you get that ranked game in Big 12 play. And you've had a couple little kind of tests already in Kansas and kind of Cincinnati's little comeback to kind of get you ready for a game like this. Utah comes in with a 13-3 record overall, 4-1 in conference. That one conference loss was 71-47 to Kansas State. And we'll talk a little bit about some stats from that here in a little bit. They did drop 102 points in a win against Arizona State. So this team can score. They're averaging about 78.6 points per game. And TCU gives up 53.5. And Utah gives up about 59.6. Very similar numbers. So I do like seeing that TCU is going to come across a team here that I think in a lot of ways it's comparable to them. They just don't have a Van Lith or a Prince necessarily on their roster or someone with that cachet.
Yeah, first ranked game is 6 weeks, and like you said, having that ranked win, this is a quad one game. That is going to be extremely big for when it comes to seeding, right? You and I were talking pre-recording, like this is, they have a win over the number three ranked team in the country right now. They have another top or another ranked win over NC State, and they have a ranked loss to South Carolina. You add a win against Utah, like you're already at 3-1 in quad one games. Which is extremely good for women's basketball. So that's it's just something that plays a huge role come selection day when it comes to one potential one seed. Maybe that's a stretch, two seed for sure, and three seed. It's a big difference.
No, it's huge. And kind of looking ahead a little bit, you've got West Virginia will probably be ranked when you play them. Maybe Oklahoma State will. I think a lot of things have to fall right for them to sneak into the top 25, but Oklahoma State would probably be considered a quad two game by the time they get to them. We talked about Kansas State. So it's like you're gonna have a lot of opportunities. And so to be able to just keep racking up these quad one wins is gonna be huge. Some key players for Utah, they're all juniors, seniors, grad students, so very experienced. Gianna Kneippens, 17 points a game, 4.5 rebounds, 2.75 assists, and she's shooting 44% from three, which is third in the Big 12 behind Madison Connor and Terrence Seitz out of Kansas State. So that's kind of their main guard, their main scorer. She's got a lot of firepower to her. Their forward is 6'3", Maya Toure, 13.8 points, 6.3 rebounds. So I think even though Sedona has a size advantage, I think that'll be a really good competition for her. An experienced player can score. And then their point is Inez Vieira, 6 points, 1.8 steals, and 5.5 assists per game. So can see the floor well, kind of like Haley is good at dishing things out. So those are kind of some players to keep an eye on. And like I said, I think there's a lot of similarities to TCU if you just kind of look at some of these skill sets.
There's you have it a little bit later in your notes, but I'm gonna ruin it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very, very similar. But where they kind of take the real big difference is the team's 3-point percentage. They've attempted like comparable stats to TCU when it comes to field goals attempted. So they actually have the same amount of makes so far on the season at 40. The difference is that opponents don't really are shooting nearly 40% on 3-pointers against them. So it's going to be a really big difference of Madison Connor again taking that big step up, HVO creating space, Sedona dominating the paint. So they've got a lot of comparable talent like you talked about, and this will just be, hey, my ones versus your ones. Let's go after it. And 9.9 times out of 10, I'm gonna put the money on our ones. So.
Well, and like I mentioned earlier, they played Kansas State and got beat 71-47. Kansas State got up 20-7 after the first quarter and held Utah to 30% shooting. So if you can get Utah out of their rhythm, bad looks, get out and run, get those fast break points, things like that, you can get Utah behind the eight ball and then be able to kind of just maintain your lead, increase it, things like that. They did allow Kansas State to shoot almost 50% from the field and 40% from three, which you were just kind of talking about there. So there's definitely ways to stop Utah and kind of make this game a little less stressful, if you will. But I don't think you can count on those things just because they do have a lot of experience.
Yes. Another big thing too is Utah is averaging in conference play. I'm only going to be speaking about stats conference play wise, just for anyone listening, so you not to get confused. If you look it up, since we're, conference play is all that really matters at this point. But Utah is second in the league, averaging 40 rebounds per game. And TCU's eighth with 34. Like, there's kind of a big difference. So it is something that, you know, we talked about it. I believe it was with Texas Tech last week about second chance opportunities on offensive rebounds. So it is something that TCU did a really good job limiting against Tech that they're going to have to replicate again this game.
And yeah, I think these tests are just so good for them as they're trying to build up their resume. Any other thoughts on Utah or UCF going into this week, JD?
If TCU loses to Utah, the world is not over. It's basketball, right? Again, it's a quad one game. If you're gonna lose a game, you want it to be a quad one.
Yes.
So, just for like we talked about with seeding purposes, obviously you don't want to lose any game at all, because, I mean, remind you, TCU still only has one loss in the year,
Yeah.
and if it's to the number two team in the country, we're also having a win over the number three team in the country. It's not. There's nothing to hang your hat on there. So.
Yeah.
Don't look at the box score, but there's nothing to hang your hat on there. So it's
Yeah,
just, it is like, you know, I hate to say it, but it is what it is. Like, if you're gonna lose, as long as everyone stays healthy, that's all you can ask for.
and I think that's a good thing to mention too is I don't expect TCU to go undefeated in conference play. That is way too hard. There's somebody could get in foul, like we talked about, like somebody could get foul trouble, you don't shoot well. There's just too many things that can go wrong. But that being said, I fully expect TCU to have a very good conference record at the end of this. But this is one of those games that you just kind of got to go in knowing, okay, this is going to be a real competition and TCU's going to have to find a way to win it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, truth be told, I'd rather lose a game like this to Utah that's still earlier in conference play than drop the single game you're going to have to Kansas State, than drop either game to Baylor. Like, it's just, sometimes you got to pick your battles. And if you had to pick one, like losing to a Utah team that's surging through the rankings right now, there's worse ways to go.
Yeah. Of course, we want them to win every game,
Yeah.
so hopefully they win, but just yeah, like you said, if they lose, season is by no means over. There's
Yeah,
still a lot to go.
absolutely. And the players will tell you that when you watch the press conferences afterwards too. They might be a little bit more negative about it, but just because they're all such hard competitors, but they kind of realize it's Haley Van Lith more than anyone understands how hard it is to be perfect in this sport.
And it's a long season. There's a lot of things that can happen. So those two games will be Tuesday and Friday this week. Both are 6:30 tip-offs at Schollmeyer Arena. If you haven't been out there yet, come check it out. Like we said, this team is doing things that haven't been seen in this program either in a long time or ever. So it's definitely worth coming out to watch. We're going to take a little bit of a look at Big 12 news and notes. We've kind of been alluding to some of this stuff already, but with the poll watching, we have Kansas State at 12, West Virginia at 17, Utah at 22, and of course TCU at 11. So four ranked teams. Changes from the previous week, Utah got into the top 25 and Oklahoma State is still receiving votes. Their loss at Kansas, I think, kind of dinged them a little bit. They had gotten more votes the previous week. But they did beat West Virginia this week, 64-57, which I think is just going to get them back into a few more getting votes. TCU plays them on January 22nd, so not this week, but the following. I don't think Oklahoma State will crack the top 25 by then. They might, but I'm circling that game because that's another really good test for TCU and another team to kind of watch.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't talk about this at all, but it is kind of something that to touch on, right? With that, how important that Oklahoma State is. Like, this is the toughest part of the schedule. TCU's entering, Utah ranked, Oklahoma State potentially ranked, Baylor ranked, Iowa State was ranked. Then you have Kansas State, and then you get Tech again. Like, this is the 5-game stretch of the season that is more important than anything else at any point.
Well, this stretch is why you play Notre Dame, South Carolina, NC State. This is why you do it.
Yeah, and it makes even like that Thanksgiving tournament look a little bit more important with having that Notre Dame game in an immediate back-to-back game. Because like you're gonna get no break for 5 straight games, and those are spread out, between what 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, pretty much. So you
Well,
got
and
time to re rest and recover in this one.
yeah, well, and it's a bit of a road stretch too, because you have the two home games this week, and then you go to Oklahoma State, then you host Baylor, and then you go to Iowa State, you go to Kansas State, and those are not easy places to play by any stretch. It's going to be a tough stretch. Another game, kind of keeping so Kansas State Utah was a game we were keeping tabs on for this week. Another one we were keeping tabs on was that OSU West Virginia game. We've talked about that one quite a bit. I'll be curious to see how West Virginia bounces back. I think they'll be fine. I think they'll stay ranked. They might fall closer to 20, or they may stay around that 17 range when the polls come out tomorrow, Monday.
At 11 a.m., 10:57 actually is when they come out. It's really annoying.
but kind of looking ahead to this coming week, games that I kind of went, okay, there's the ones I'm going to watch for TCU is that Oklahoma State at UCF, just because keeping tabs on them because of playing TCU, and then Utah at Baylor. Right now, both teams are 4-1 in the Big 12. Obviously, that's going to change, but that's Utah's going to play at Baylor before they play TCU.
Yeah,
I want to see what they look like.
I think this is a big tell for both teams, right? Baylor has struggled comparatively to what you thought they would this year. And Utah has looked a lot better than he thought they would this year. So it's a really good tell of, hey, when the lights shine the brightest, who's going to come out on top? So it is something to kind of, if Utah comes out and dominates Baylor in a really physical game, then that game against TCU just got another step more important. One for rest of season preparation and just kind of it becomes, hey, you know what? This is going to be a dogfight. Let's get into it. And but yeah, the Oklahoma State UCF. Oklahoma State always scores, and UCF can't stop anyone. So I'm really excited to see the final line on that one. So that'll be quite the sight, especially after Oklahoma State or UCF has to play TCU again. So who knows what that looks like? And yeah, I mean that is another thing too with the Utah Baylor. Like if this is a very physically demanding game, like Utah could have a little bit of scrapes and bruises before playing TCU, which also could play a factor.
And on Oklahoma State, their other game this week is at Houston. So I would think Oklahoma State will come into that game, come into the TCU game that following week at 6-1 in Big 12 play. So it's going to be a big game, even if Oklahoma State's not ranked. It's going to be a big game.
Yeah,
So
it's the one thing too is, I mean, putting up Oklahoma State putting up that many points on West Virginia, a team who hasn't really given up points, is kind of something that makes you pop out a little bit. Say, hey, they really can get after it.
Yeah, when they're on, they're on. Absolutely. So just taking a quick look at just kind of where teams are falling in the Big 12. Like I talked about, Kansas State, TCU are 5-0, kind of that tier one right now. You've got Oklahoma State, Baylor, and Utah at 4-1. West Virginia at 3-2. Colorado and Iowa State are also 3-2. You got Cincy, Arizona State at 2-3, and then Kansas Tech, BYU, UCF, Houston, all with 1 or 0 wins. So you're really starting to see for sure a top half and a bottom half. And like we talked about earlier, kind of tier one and tier two. And TCU's coming up on that tough stretch. So it's going to be very interesting to see how all this continues to shake out with all these teams in the Big 12. Because you've got four teams that are ranked right now, one that's receiving votes. So this is a conference that I think can get a lot of respect from the committee. And if you take a peek at bracketology now, you're seeing, these teams are getting some respect. But I think there's even more opportunities for this conference to just continue gaining respect and being able to get quite a few teams into the tournament.
Yeah, it's also, we've touched on it a little bit throughout the year is with women's basketball kind of being a top heavy sport, right? Each game you lose kind of becomes a little bit more important, especially when you're only playing a team once, because they're not as big of a risk as them being upset by a team like maybe UCF or like Houston or like BYU or Texas Tech, like Kansas State, Oklahoma State. I mean, Oklahoma State does have a decently bad loss, but still, like when they're on, they kind of seem to find their swagger since then. Utah's looked a lot better. Baylor's looked better. Like, you have to win these games just because sometimes you only get one shot. You only get one shot at Kansas State. You only get one shot at Utah. I believe Oklahoma State's only even one time.
Yep, and it's in
So,
Stillwater.
yeah. So, you like, whenever you're playing these teams who are right next to you in record wise, like, you have to win them just because when it comes time to Big 12 tournament play, I'm going to play the least amount of games as possible to get some rest at that time. So it's just another factor that kind of plays into it.
Anything else you want to touch on this week, JD?
No, I'm just so excited to talk about after the Utah game, talk about the results of that, and then talk Oklahoma State and Baylor. And then the week after that, we get to talk Iowa State, Kansas State. Tori, we're in the meat and potatoes now. Like,
No, this is getting to be really exciting, and as fun as it is to watch a game where everybody can get in and you're blowing teams out and you just feel good, like, oh, this team is so great. In some ways, it's like you live for these games where you're like, oh, everything has to go right to get a win. Because that's where you really start to learn about your team. You really start to learn who can do what. Your coaches have to know what they're doing. They have to be able to make those calls, out of bounds calls, substitutions, whatever it might be, down the stretch to set the team up to succeed. And so I'm with you. I'm so excited for this 2-3 week stretch here. I wish some of these games were at home, like Kansas State, but you can't have every single game at home. So I get it. You got to go on the road, but I think that's awesome too because it just makes the team that much better. It prepares them for what's coming.
Yeah, it's we've been asking for it all the whole time is you just got to get to this stretch and then you kind of really see what they're made out of. 'Cause it's a you know, like you said, it's a preview. When you get to the tournament, you don't get to play a team like UCF or Texas Tech outside of potentially the first round. Like you get the best of the best and you got to earn it. So it's a really good stretch. And I guess we can kind of talk it now a little bit, but what is realistically, what are you more than okay with? Like, let's say worst comes to worst, like how many losses would you be like, okay, you know what? That's no big deal.
As far as like a final conference record,
Just for like these next five games, right?
got to
Which
these
is,
next 5 games.
yeah, with that, you know, the Utah, Baylor, all of those, that stretch.
As crazy as this sounds, I think if they can come out of there with one loss. I mean, here's the thing, they can beat all of these teams. They can beat Kansas State, they can beat Iowa State, Baylor, OSU, Utah. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a slip up in there somewhere. And so that's why I say, I think if you come out of this stretch with one loss, you're in fantastic shape. Now, who's that loss to? You can argue over which one would look better. I would say you'd want it to be to a ranked team just because it's still, you're not losing a quad three or quad two. Like you're getting the wins that you should. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if they come out here. What would that be? 4-1? I think that would be a success.
Yep, that's kind of what I'm leaning towards as well as, you know, you gotta, I'm fine with one loss. I care less who it is. Well, okay, that's not true. Any of the four teams except Baylor, I'm more than okay with. Other than that, like, just get through it healthy. That's all I care about, first and foremost. I don't even care if you lose two games, as long as you have health. This at end of the year run is the end of the year run. It doesn't matter what rank you are.
Well, and I think that's the other thing too is if you're looking at that bigger picture and you can stay as the top one or two teams in the Big 12, get to the, have a good run in the Big 12 conference tournament, you'll be in good shape going into March as far as a seeding. Obviously, you want the highest seed you can possibly get. Everybody wants to always win, and this team is so competitive and they're so veteran that they're going to do everything possible to get the highest seed they can. But I think also we have to remember they're human and things are going to happen. That's just the way it is.
Only other thing I want to talk about is imagine losing by giving up a 54 and 10 run today. That was crazy.
Oh,
SMU, yeah.
yeah.
Anyways, yeah, that's all I wanted to say, dude.
If you're having a bad day, just remember.
Yeah, just remember that never happened here.
Well, thank you everyone so much for joining us today. For Jaden Andrus, I'm Tori Couch. You've been listening to Splashpad, a TCU on SI podcast. Until next time, have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, guys.